Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday. It's the 29th of November, 14 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. Good morning. I hope you're having a lovely morning. It's a beautiful weather out. It's very nice. It's a great day to be stuck in traffic. Teresa just came in after dealing with all that, so it's wonderful to have her here. Let me introduce the panel to you, and then we'll get started. We have a lot to talk about. There was news, a lot of news yesterday, a lot of news overnight, so we'll dig in and start talking about it in just a moment. Panel at WAMC.org is where you can write us letters. We love to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here. He is the man at the center of the roundtable. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm at the end of it anyway, and I, because it's more of an amoeba than a round. But in any case, as my mom would say, How'd you do?
Good to have you here. Thank you. Jen Smith is with us. She is a wonderful reporter for the Berkshire Eagle, covers education and many other issues as well. All purpose, I would say, right?
It is true.
Yes, cover a little bit of everything.
I'm so proud of her. Every time I look in the paper and I see, now that you're one of us, and I see one of your pieces, I say, that's our Jen.
Right. Well, thank you kindly.
A couple months ago, who's this woman scooping us? Now it's like, one of our own. Congratulations. Welcome. Nice to have you here. And Teresa Bourgeois joins us, as she does each and every Wednesday. Good morning.
Delighted to be here. Homework for all of our listeners.
Okay. What's the homework?
Yes. I want everyone to write in and tell us how the tax cuts are going to affect you if you're, or the lack of a budget if you work at a neighborhood health center or if you have childhood Health Plus, or if you deduct education funding, or if you're a teacher. I'd like to hear.
Can I ask
how
a question?
Affect you? Yeah.
Do you think people know the answer to that?
Well, I think some people, teachers know that they can deduct their some of the school supplies that they buy for their students, and so do they know that they wouldn't be able to take that deduction anymore? People who renovate historic homes know that they get a deduction for doing that. They know that they won't get that anymore. People who own charitable deductions, people who work for nonprofits who rely on people who get deductions for their charitable contributions.
It could kill public television, public radio, the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
And separate from the tax bill, there's this, budget bill that's supposed to pass and some things to go with it. Like the Child Health Plus funding has not been authorized since October 1st. So our neighborhood health center funding or hospital funding or on and on and on.
You know what's so interesting, Teresa, and that is that we see so many people who are going to face this stuff, and we see all of these terrible, like the Children's Health Program, things being not funded, and yet these guys want to raise the deficit by $1.5 billion.
And that will, we went through this with the Reagan, because that will then explode the deficit and drive a whole nother round of tax cuts. And I don't think they're concerned about exploding the deficit because, not tax cuts, budget cuts, because ultimately what a number of them want to do is cut entitlements, Medicare, Medicaid, that kind of thing. And so 6 months from now, they'll say, oh, terrible deficits. We've got to get it under control. We have to cut the entitlement programs. And, they're teed up to cut the welfare programs.
In fact, as soon as the Democrats get back in power, the mantra of the Republicans will be the deficit is too high. And yet here they are, having the chutzpah to make the deficit high.
That's what they try to. I keep thinking of Grace. Grace was this amazing woman after the Reagan tax cuts and budget in the early 80s when I was working in Washington. And it just, the economy tanked and homeless population just exploded in Washington. And I started volunteering every other Friday night in a shelter for women. And a shelter, it was just a floor of a church where we put mats down. But Grace was 78 years old. She spent the day living in St. Matthew's Cathedral. She'd wash out her clothes and hang them in the confessional. And then she spent the nights at the shelter. And she'd been driven out of her home after the Reagan tax cuts. And how many more Graces are there on the horizon if this gets...
There's a great potential to widen, I think, a lot of those gaps, because when you not only
raise the national deficit, and you challenge the kilter of what the deficit is and GDP, it's compounded by our current workforce gaps. There's no stimulus that's being announced in tandem with that. You know, how are we going to balance people's incomes? And so percentage in between our social classes, I think, is going to increase significantly as Alan had mentioned before, different programs get cut. It challenges a lot of places. And you think about, you know, coming from the Berkshires, where I think we have one of the densest number of nonprofits per capita.
Sure.
That serve a lot of people is really astounding.
And I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
You've spoken so eloquently before about your interest and focus on pre-K and early education. Mm. You know, what's this going to do to pre-K and early education programs? 0 to 5, I mean, all the research says those first 3 years of life are critical. You know, you let Child Health Plus expire, you cut funding for neighborhood health centers, you know, Karen DeWitt here, who is a reporter that, you know, for this station and others around the state, has done a lot of good work on what's a bit obscure but important is disproportionate share funding for hospitals. You know, it's a mouthful, but it's the, you know, when people walk into the emergency room without insurance, some hospitals have to cover them, but they have to, there's a federal program that helps reimburse a portion of that, and it's what helps some of these hospitals stay afloat.
So let me ask a question, just in a way of advancing this: should Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi have met with the president yesterday, if for no other reason than not to give him the opportunity to have the empty chair press conference, but also, of course, to actually, in a hope, to come to some discussion?
Well, I'll take a shot at that. It seems to me they really had no choice of not going. Because what happened is he punched them in the solar plexus. He sent out a series of tweets in which he said, there's no deal, there's not going to be any deal, they're wrong about everything. And of course they had to say, well, what are we, your patsies? We're not gonna take this. We're not coming. You've been rude. I think it was exactly the right thing to say. And I don't think that stupid, empty chair business convinced anybody in the middle or on the other side.
No, I mean, it obviously it looked like a stunt. It was a stunt, mm-hmm. and but it gave him the opportunity to accuse the two of, quote, being weak on the military, all talk, no action, and
opening the doors to immigrants. You know, he basically said they're you know, don't care about drugs. Like, drugs flow into the country. Let immigrants flow into the country. Weak on crime, weak on military.
Well, you know what? But his numbers aren't coming and going up. And the Washington Post did a magnificent story today, and I believe it was the Washington Post, in which they talked about the number of lies this guy tells. You know, that tape of him now, after he had confirmed it was him, now wasn't really him. Somebody made that up.
The Access Hollywood.
Yeah, the Access Hollywood. You know, I mean,
well,
this,
and then
this
I'm
guy's
sorry,
just a lion,
and
a liar.
And then to revisit the whole issue of again bringing up the validity of President Obama's birth certificate. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I mean, good
I didn't even
Lord.
See that one.
Oh my
yeah.
God!
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
So then this morning, in talking about immigration, he shared videos, retweeted videos, portraying Muslims committing acts of violence on Twitter, as the New York Times says, likely to fuel anti-Islam sentiments popular among the president's political base in the United States. The White House did not immediately respond to questions about the videos. Mr. Trump also took a shot at CNN and praised his administration for a strong stock market while posting the videos. The videos were titled "Muslim Migrant Beats Up Dutch Boy on Crutches," "Muslim Destroys a Statue of Virgin Mary," "An Islamist Mob Pushes Teenage Boy Off Roof and Beats Him to Death." These are videos that were shared by the president of the United States.
You know, Joe, you don't really have to go back further than the 1930s, the late 1920s, and Hitler. I mean, this is exactly out of his playbook. It's the kind of thing that he did, which is to incite people to say the Jews are bad in his case, or now the Muslims are bad. It's the same thing.
I mean, you look at just the last month. I mean, just the last month, of whether it be illegals, what he has done today with Muslims, in talking about African American athletes, in talking about African American athletes, and then being accused of racism, and then replying by making America great again. Using the slur just this week, Pocahontas, during a Native American event. And then the videos, I don't, you know, it's just mind-boggling to me of how we are viewed in the rest of the world, and how even people sense of decency would be able to allow that and to want to work within the confines of a relationship with someone who is doing that type of activity.
He disrespects the office that he holds.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's almost this hypocrisy. If you're just looking for facts, the president uses the word weak a lot to as a shot at whatever he's against, whether it's Schumer and Pelosi's policies or something else, but we as the American public have yet to see sort of strong stances and measures of being proactive in problem solving. And I think spending so much time sharing social media the way that he does, making commentary that he does, detracts from actually getting work done when, Teresa, you've mentioned, there's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot that should be done before the end of the year in terms of, helping the public and growing our economy and making sure people are employed, have health care, are getting their basic needs met.
I just also want to mention, because in my litany there, I left out supporting an alleged sexual molester of children. And also the fact that even this morning, we'll get to the Matt Lauer story in a few minutes.
Oh gosh, the tweet.
But then the tweet this morning of saying that Matt Lauer was just fired from NBC for quote unquote inappropriate sexual behavior in the workplace. But when top executives at NBC and when will top executives at NBC and Comcast be fired for putting out so much fake news? Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about underplaying the issue. Mm-hmm.
Then the light shines on him.
Well, I understand, but then just don't say anything.
Right, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. But to your earlier point when you asked, do I think that people understand what's in the tax bill? I mean,
is that question still on the table?
Yeah, no. but I think it's all part of the same conversation. I think all of these things, the tweets about Matt Lauer and the Muslim tweets and all of that, by all reports, there was Pelosi and Schumer were working with the Republicans in the Congress, and they were inching closer to a deal on the budget. Now, it wasn't being publicly discussed, but they were coming together and they have a December 8th deadline before there is shutdown, to try to avert a shutdown. So what was in that deal that Bannon or whoever prompted Trump to do this they wanted to blow it up? You know, what was in there? What was in that compromise?
I think it was the DACA.
I think they were close to a deal on. I think you were absolutely right, Alan. I think they were probably close to a deal on DACA. It seems to me that Bannon is running the show from the sidelines.
Sure.
And they needed to blow up whatever deal that they were very close to on the budget. And it's probably DACA. And so what is the carnage that's left in that wake? You know, it's the DACA folks. It's the 9 million children who depend on the child health Plus healthcare program. It's the neighborhood health centers. It's so many other components of the budget.
Let's when you look at the fact that this moved forward, there's still people. There's still holdouts. There's still questions. And with a vote expected today.
So I'm a bit conflating things. So there's a tax bill that's moving through. And the debate in the Senate on the tax bill starts today. Yesterday, mm-hmm. the Senate Budget Committee moved it forward. And so today, they're supposed to go to the floor today with a compromise. They still don't have the final bill. But so they'll do 2 days of debate and then pass it or not, and then it goes to conference.
But we should know by Friday.
And we should know by Friday if it moves forward. The president met with the senators yesterday on the Hill. It apparently went well. They've got all of these people agreeing. You know, everyone comes out saying their thing got fixed. Well, if each person's thing got fixed, then the numbers don't add up. So
I want to know what happens to Murkowski. And the people who voted no on the health care
Collins,
because I got a letter this morning taking me to task for saying that the senators don't have a lot of courage and pointing out that these two women have courage. I said, but I wrote back and said, I haven't seen that they have any courage right now, that they're not going to vote for this bill. They're not saying they're not going to vote for it.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll have letters, and we will, of course, talk about other issues. We want to get to the Matt Lauer story and other things that are going on. We welcome your comments, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. We enjoy your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll get to those in just a second. Teresa Bourgeois is here, communications consultant. The Berkshire Eagles, Jen Smith is here. Alan Chartok, I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your comments. Panel at WAMC.org. Sarah LaDuke, our wonderful producer, just came in a few moments and said, just remind them to keep them short.
Yeah, so some of these are way too long.
We want to get to as many people as possible. We get a lot of letters that say, why didn't you read my letter? So we want to get to as many as possible. So just keep them short.
Shorter the better?
Short to the point. That's right. So let us do some letters, and then we'll move on to other stuff.
Okay, boss. Here. Brian says, question about General Kelly. President Trump having the nerve to comment on Lauer and others accused of such behavior, following the code talker's disrespect for the Oval, how long until General Kelly throws up his hands and walks away? Who knows?
Well, I mean, it doesn't seem like that's, if it hasn't happened yet, would it happen now?
He seems to be perfectly comfortable.
You know, it's a very, I mean, can you imagine what being, working for MacArthur, for example, back over to World War II must have been like, you know, and afterwards in Korea and the rest of it, you know, you're a staff general. You work for somebody like that. And you're trained, you know, to service the guy you're working for.
It also could not have come as a surprise, right? I mean, he knew what he was getting himself into when he walked into that job. It wasn't like there were any. He knew the temperament. He knew the issues. He knew the fact that he was going to tweet.
And,
he knew what he signed up for.
Well, unless, of course, there are people who are megalomaniacal. Certainly the president is, but maybe this particular general, thought that he had the power within him to bring the president to bay. He would not have been the first person.
And, he may agree with a lot of it. When he was at Homeland Security, he was pretty,
very
conservative. And I listened to his hearings and, I thought, but he turned out to be much more conservative. The actor that I find fascinating right now is Vice President Mike Pence.
How so?
Yeah. Where is he? He's out traveling around the country raising money. Republicans are doing great raising money with Mike Pence's help. But do you see him? Where is he? And by all reports, he put his key people in key spots all around the bureaucracy to get the changes that the conservatives want.
So can I ask you a question? How much, in your opinion, though, and by bringing this up, how much autonomy do you believe that he has? Is he working within the tight stricture of the Trump administration, or is he just taking the fact that he's vice president and just going out and doing his thing and marching to his own drummer to satisfy his agenda while helping the president satisfy his?
Let me take you back to the firing of Flynn. Remember, Flynn was fired, if I'm not incorrect about this, because he had, quote, lied to the vice president.
Allegedly.
Lied to the vice president. I think that the vice president, you know, goes his own way until, and it's clear the way he obsequiously stands up behind the president, you know, and does all of that stuff, that, you know, the president is totally in charge. But I think Pence's knows where the line is, what he can do and what he can't do. He wasn't chosen for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah. Where is he on the Roy Moore issue?
He's heading to Israel next week, it just announced. So,
getting out of the country.
Clearly his focus is elsewhere.
Doing the Alabama vote, he's getting out of the country. And doing, you know, think about that. The vice president's getting out of the country, you know, as we're going into a major budget battle. You think about what Joe Biden, vice president, he was right in the middle of the budget battle because he understood the Hill very well, and he was quietly, or not so quietly, working to bring all the sides together in a time like this.
Well, it may
and
be.
Mike Pence is leaving the country.
Maybe, Teresa, that they just told him to shut up. Well, maybe he has some dissonance, and they said, "Shut up and just go do your thing."
Yeah, but I think Teresa's point is that he's doing things, and he's making a lot of changes, and changes that could perhaps obviously help his future.
And
that's right.
And then Trump doesn't give a damn about.
Doesn't he? Doesn't care. He's doing it under the, you know, the cover of Trump's crazy tweets.
Yeah.
And silently, effectively. Remember that when Chris Christie was ousted as head of the transition committee, who came in? Pence came in, and then overseeing all of the assignments and all of the agencies. And by all accounts, he has put his people all around to, you know, to try to make the draconian, well, I'll call them draconian from my perspective, changes that he, very conservative Mike Pence, wants.
The relationship of vice presidents to presidents has always fascinated me. You know, I mean, you had Dick Nixon with Eisenhower, and clearly Ike had to keep Nixon under control on, you know, on some stuff. You had, you know, in this last vice presidency with Joe Biden, as you just mentioned, Biden was given all kinds of responsibility.
Absolutely.
He was sort of a co-president doing all of that. So I think this is one of the older models, which is you do what you're told and you shut up.
Right. And the other question, of course, with him is how complicit is he? I love it. The complicit is the word of the year in the dictionary. But how complicit is he in all of the Mueller-related, you know, Flynn activities and Mueller-related investigations? Mm-hmm. So anyway, I interrupted letters.
Oh, so sorry.
More letters.
Mario says,
"Hi, Mario.
I'm hugely concerned about the increases in the deficit. The national debt has reached the highest point in history. And the party of so-called fiscal conservatism decides to recycle old trickle-down policies that have long been debunked. We need politicians on both sides of the aisle who do the right thing, and we need to stop this outrage."
Yeah, you tell him, Mario. I think, and that's the problem, though. They're not making any policies or having any discussion at all, either together or with the public, and that's proven problematic.
Well, I mean, you know, this guy is a minority president, and I don't mean that. I don't mean that in any other way, except that he's trying to shove stuff through onto the American people that they don't want. They don't want this stuff.
But Alan, how does Senator Rand Paul or Senator Bob Corker or the Freedom Caucus on the House side, how do they justify voting for this tax package that is clearly going to explode the deficits?
Well, they hold their finger. They'll wet their finger, and then they hold it up in the air, and they judge their political fortunes based on what moves they're taking. I think a lot of these people are saying, "Hey, we can't say to the American people, including that 36% who happen to be more than 36% in our states and in our constituency and the people who vote in our primaries, we have to go along with this guy on this."
Well, I think fortunes was the the operative word there, and Alan, what you just said, because I think really it's not the 30%, because for most of them, these bills aren't, the tax package is not good for them, but it's their funders. It's the Mercers of the world.
Sure.
So when they're judging their fortunes, I think a lot of this is driven by their top funders.
Well, we all know you get elected. I'm sorry, Jen, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that's right on the money, Teresa, with the fear. That's really, I think, also dictating how legislators are acting around the proposed tax cuts and a lot of other measures that are happening now. It's tied into funding, and their top donors are notoriously pushing them to say, if you don't pass this, don't call me.
We don't pay.
Yeah.
fee for service is what our politics have become. No question about it. That's why the Obama, everybody give, $27 or whatever it was really brilliant, because it was exactly the direction we should be going in, and which is, by the way, stopped right now. There is no Obama getting $27, per person.
Right.
But that is the disgrace of American politics. You get what you pay for. Susan says, why are social programs always the first thing to be cut? A majority of senators voted for $700 billion for defense, including most Democrats. Why so much, and why not cut that? Well,
defense contractors.
Well, it's defense contractors. It's also, you say to somebody, Kim Jong-un can wipe us out tomorrow. We need the money in order to deal with a guy like that. It's always been so. It's ridiculous, but it's always been so. Defense is a sacred cow.
But often you find that even when secretaries of defense come in and want to tighten the budgets and improve the way the spending goes, that you end up having Congress authorizing items that the Pentagon doesn't really want.
It's exactly so.
I've jobs bill.
On the congressional corner, I have interviewed a series of congressmen who represent the submarine base over here, and they're wonderful people. They really are. The congressmen are great guys, both Republicans and Democrats. And I have to say, when it comes to don't you dare take the billions of dollars of submarine construction that we probably don't need. They don't say that. I say that, away from us.
But sometimes people find innovative solutions, like with the Watervliet Arsenal in the suburbs of Albany, where for years, it got funding that it probably didn't need. But now it's been transformed into essentially a tech center. And so they found a useful way to sustain it and create jobs.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. Do you have how many letters?
Two more.
Oh, yeah, let's just do those before we go to break.
Susan says,
hold on, Rob.
Oh, no, one actually.
Okay, great.
Okay, and Barbara says, phone calls. Both my senators are against the tax bill. Does it help to still call them? Isn't that preaching to the choir? Well, I'm trying to email outside of my district, an automatic response asking me for my zip code. Phone calls are answered in the same way. Letters get to be examined for anthrax and take weeks or months to be delivered. Barbara, you just got to keep on keeping on.
Keep going.
Even if they're for it, thank them for being for it, because those get tallied.
Sure.
And so then somebody who's for it can say, I heard from X thousand of my constituents who are opposed this bill.
Power in numbers. I think we've seen community letter writing campaigns really increase this year.
And tell your story about why it matters. Why it matters.
And I'm sorry, Teresa. And Jen makes a great point, because the first thing I read online in the Eagle in the middle of the night are the letters to the editor. And boy, are there letters to the editor this year in the Eagle. They're almost a good half of them have to do with the Berkshire Museum. But it's real interesting.
Yes, yes. So thank our expanded editorial department for managing all those.
All right. We welcome your letters too. panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Welcome to your letters, panel@wamc.org. In fact, I have a fistful of new ones, but we'll get to those in a second. And before we do, I want to work on another story, which was the story we woke up to this morning. I have to say that even on all these stories that continue to come out, I was not shocked by the content of the story, but more so of the timing of the story, which is that Matt Lauer was fired over misconduct allegations. The rapidity of this particular event is surprising. Apparently, there were some stories that had been swirling for quite a while. Reporters have been digging. And an employee went to the HR office on Monday. They, NBC and the HR office, did an investigation into Matt Lauer's conduct and said that they had reason to believe that it may not have been an isolated incident. And after receiving this detailed allegation of sexual harassment against him, it led them to sever ties with him, his contract. They let the staff of the Today Show know this morning, about 10 to 15 minutes before they went on the air. And it was pretty interesting to watch those faces on television. As Al Roker was saying during the weather, you know, just it's you get news like this and you're just trying to process it. Obviously, there had been some chatter for quite some time. He last appeared on the air on Tuesday. He was just the host of the Macy's Day Parade on Thursday, and now the man who brings more money into NBC News than any other person in that network is gone.
When you say brings more money in, what does that mean? I'm sorry.
Meaning that the revenue that show brings in, and the hours that he is on the air, and the events, especially considering Lester Holt, while the face of NBC News in the sense of the evening news, that after Brian Williams was let go, because he wasn't let go, he was moved to MSNBC, mm-hmm. but after he was put on suspension and then moved to MSNBC because of his issues with the truth, then Matt Lauer became the guy. So he was doing all of these events. He did during election time, was doing the forums and so forth. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we were saying this off the air, but as far as I'm concerned, that's when he should have been fired, is a year ago in September when he hosted that event with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
Well, they were remembering that he was almost obsequious with Donald Trump.
He was talking to Donald Trump about his golf game, yeah. and on the issue of national security would not get off the email issue.
And then got on to Hillary and really...
Really got on her. And so, anyway... I think Savannah Guthrie, who is the co-host of the Today Show, gave a very eloquent statement this morning and said, you know, you try to process, it's difficult in her case of being someone who is a friend and who has worked with him for a long time and trying to process that these things happen by a person that you think you know. It's difficult, but yet we are in a time where these stories, and she applauded the woman's courage for coming forward. We have heard that now that both the New York Times and Variety had been working on major stories. In fact, at least one of the reporters who broke the Harvey Weinstein story for the New York Times had been working on the Matt Lauer story, mm-hmm. which was, I don't know when it was scheduled to be published. I think they were still working on it, which may have obviously sped this whole thing up. However, my understanding is that they'll be putting out a portion of the story, a look in the, at least a part of the investigation. They'll release that later today.
Yeah, I just pulled up a tweet from Elizabeth Wagmeister, who's a reporter at Variety, and she says that at Variety, Raymond Satuda and I have been working on a Matt Lauer story for months, and NBC was aware. She says that there are multiple women we've spoken with, far-ranging accusations against Lauer. So I think... clearly, they must have some at least anecdotal evidence that merits the story that they've been working on. You know, what else they've found in the past few months will be interesting to see, and who's corroborating it as well.
Well, the important word here is multiple. Mm-hmm. because we saw it yesterday with this Washington Post disgrace where they tried to sell a phony story to the Washington Post, and the Post was good enough to have figured it out. Mm-hmm. But every news organization, and I know ours does, has to be very, very careful of anything you get. You have to be absolutely sure that you're not being taken to the cleaners.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's all about accountability. And I think this particular issue, as we've seen with Charlie Rose, Matt Lauer, Harvey Weinstein, even Bill O'Reilly and those folks, in an era where folks like myself and my colleagues are struggling to maintain credibility, this adds a lot of fuel and challenge to say that there are people who are supposed to be protecting the public who are getting away and hurting them.
Jen, I don't understand something you just said. Mm-hmm. Struggling to protect our credibility. Mm-hmm. What's that struggle about?
Well, I think that in the past year, I mean, look at our own president is discounting the
enemy
media,
of the people.
And, yes, we are enemy of the people. And
I see what you mean. Yeah.
And so I think when there are so many great journalists out there trying to do work and these allegations eclipse anything that's being done and become politicized in dialogue, it really challenges the work that folks are trying to do.
This is going to sound flip, but I say it almost 100% seriously, which is, will there be another man ever to host a morning news show?
I think it's
I mean, it seems that the culture that has been allowed for so long, and you just wonder what's going to
I think the
What's
question the question is, will, again, you know, I keep saying, is this a bump stock moment or is this a pivotal moment? A bump stock meaning, you know, like with after Las Vegas, mm-hmm. You know,
the
for
focus.
A moment, everybody said we've got to change the bump stock rules, and then we didn't. People moved on. So are people just going to move on, or is this a pivotal moment? And I think we won't know now. We're going to know 6 months, a year from now. If 6 months from now we're still talking about this in a way that, you know, I think we're now in this Me Too moment where you're having all, you know, women are finally feeling empowered, or people feeling empowered that they can come and speak out against powerful forces like Matt Lauer. But after we get through this phase where people finally feel free to speak, then you have to get into the phase of, well, what do you do about it? How do you change the culture? How do you deal with people who are predatory? How do you deal with enablers who allow that predatory behavior to continue? In many of these cases, you know, Charlie Rose, other people had schedulers or assistants or other people that knew that this was happening. People know. And then how do you have victims not be victimized, feel strong enough that they can speak up? One of the things Guthrie said is, quote, it's long overdue
right.
that women feel empowered. That's key. But what's next?
That's such an interesting mm-hmm. point you make. I knew a state legislator's secretary who quit. And she quit, and she said to me, I'm not making his dates for him anymore.
Correct.
Well, it means he was making the dates for him for a while there.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, the other thing, too, is just over the last 3 or 4 weeks where these stories have come to the forefront, Matt Lauer was hosting the Today Show talking to the victims, talking to people about this situation, and... Again, the network knew, the people on that set knew that there were questions around, and yet you put it on, and I understand it's business, but what the hell were they thinking?
It absolutely challenges the ethics of you know, how things are being done. And I think, again, there seems to be this longstanding culture that you can get away with it, or it's just little things. I mean, not like I want to refer to the TMZ, but I think TMZ just put out a video of Katie Kirk talking about Matt Lauer allegedly, you know, tapping her on the behind, and he used to do that a lot. And you know, what what was done back then.
Well, and absolutely concerning in that, but we do have to suspect that if an allegation is made and you were fired overnight and you were the cash cow for the network, that the allegation must have been incredible.
Yeah. Oh, serious. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, but on the other hand, I know you got to go, Joe, to the break, but you know, every organization has top people in it, and you worry that the people who were top have reputations themselves and would not be amiss to discharge people who bring this
well,
stuff
up. Well, I mean,
up.
Look at Wake the, up. Look Wake at the up, NFL folks. And Behave. How long, you know, because money prevailed, you know, how long do we let NFL players, you know, get away with abusing their spouses the way they have?
Mm-hmm. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have other issues to discuss. Ray Graff is with us with news. He's back. He's what? You feeling all right? You feeling
he
okay?
Has a,
nice.
He has a cold. He needs some hot tea, some honey with a little brandy in it.
Ray, we feel for
get
you.
Get a nod.
Yeah, he liked the brandy nod. Idea. We'll hear from Ray right too. After this. Well, we had a very productive break. I hope you did as well.
well, breaks are very necessary. You need to, you need to go here or there or whatever.
That's right.
Make an egg.
Cup of tea.
What do you like, Alan?
What?
You like radishes.
I like radishes.
Yeah, that's what I know.
I like radishes.
That's what I learned during the break. Alan likes radishes.
They're very good.
Right. With salt? Do you put salt on your radishes?
No. No. Sodium.
Yeah, my mother did that too.
A little salt.
Is that
radishes.
You both grew up in Cahoes. You and my mother both grew up in Cahoes.
I think it's a Cahoes thing to put salt on your radishes.
No, you should not have salt on anything. Salt is very, very bad.
Well,
no,
I understand that, but
some
also
some people need salt. I need salt.
Now let me also ask you this: How about cantaloupe melon? Do you put it on?
Oh, you got to put the salt on the cantaloupe.
See,
melon.
That's another thing.
That's disgusting. Now we're going to get mail about this kind of chit chat. We get it every day. Why do you people?
I want to talk about taxes. That's all I want to talk about.
Who do you think we are? Who do you think you are?
Do we care?
I want to get.
I'm just checking.
I really want to talk about the tax bill and the budget bill because I think that's critical.
Didn't we spend the first half hour doing that?
I could have a slice of melon right now with some salt on it. I'd be very happy.
How
about Vichy water? Where do you stand on Vichy water?
I don't put salt in Vichy water.
No, but do you like it?
I love Vichy water.
Me
so,
too.
Like, do you have a longing to go to Saratoga and to have the Vichy water?
I love. Yeah.
This all plays into my.
It's all the Cahoes thing. The yeah, I think Vichy it was water, salt on the melon, and radishes.
You know you're from Cahoes.
Geographic, I believe. All right, we have letters, and then we'll move on to other
People
topics.
People are saying, "What's
okay,
Cahoes?"
I have a too long.
What's
metaphor.
A Cahoes?
I have a too.
Go ahead.
I have a too long letter from Robin.
Hi, Robin, and
who takes great issue with the way NPR. Does the news. And then say, well, I do not expect you to change your news program. In other words, we should get rid of NPR. I would encourage you to look at other news outlets. For now, we do. We have the BBC, folks. I am finding my radio news on BBC World News Service and Democracy. I still tune in to listen for Alan's 7:45 commentary and the roundtable at 9. You have my continued support. Robin. Hey, Robin, we love you.
Thanks,
thank you
Robin.
For that.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I can't say that I always disagree with you.
I love the BBC.
Yeah, me too. I listen every morning, and, you know, I'm in that car at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. That's when the interesting stuff is on.
Yeah, that I listen a lot of
it.
Letters.
Later on. Yeah, go ahead.
Sarah Sanders' tweet says, Martha, my husband and I believe Trump's angry and intolerant attitude has allowed many of the angry and intolerant events currently seen in our society. It would be nice to say that those around him are above the fray. Sadly, Sarah Huckabee Sanders tweeted yesterday that it was finally some good news from CNN. That came in response to the news that CNN would be attending the White House Christmas party. Sad.
They're not attending.
They're
refusing to attend the Christmas party.
Thank you for correcting me. That is a major issue, major corrector. Elio says, good morning, panel. I'm looking forward to not having to pay a penalty tax for not having insurance. Before the Affordable Care Act, I used to have company fund-sponsored family policy that was affordable, but now I haven't been able to afford $750 a month plus a $500 deductible. I cannot afford that on a low middle-class salary for a household of five. I chose to save the money instead in case of emergencies, but only in the penalized for the past few years. Hope that changes. I believe it is against the Constitution for our government to force us to buy any product. That's not freedom to me, and that's from Elio. And that's interestingly because it gets to the bottom of the Roberts decision, in which he said, basically, it's a tax.
Well, does he drive and buy car insurance? And is he offended by that?
Or should we really get over all this garbage? Because there's no question that it is too expensive and the rest. But the way we should really have is, Medicare for all, which is what we should do. And get the insurance company's greedy hands out of it.
And the fact is, one way or another, we're all going to pay for health insurance.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
We're either going to pay by pooling and having it be traditional insurance, or some people are not going to buy their insurance. And then, God forbid, but the real world, they're going to have a reason to need to go to the hospital. And then we're all going to pay their bill. One way or the other, we're all going to pay.
And Michael writes an excellent letter, Medical Expenses and Aging Boomers. Please address the potential impact of the House's proposal to abandon the medical expense deduction, especially as it impacts seniors living in nursing homes where the cost may be as high as $120,000. Aging boomers will put additional pressure on public resources if they go through their savings more quickly without the deduction. And that's Mike from Clifton Park.
Mike, really, that's a great observation.
It's a really important part of the tax package to bring up. It will be very detrimental to elder people and also people with children with chronic illnesses or, adults with chronic illnesses. There are a certain percentage of the population that have really high medical bills.
These people just don't give a damn.
If you're not making enough to even meet, deductibles, which is a whole other issue, there's a lot of folks who question whether they should have health care at all.
It's interesting. There's a hearing going on right now in the Congress for the new Health and Human Services Secretary, Azar, his name is, and he was at Eli Lilly and responsible for raising costs on insulin, which is a big issue. And I see some tweets where he's saying, you have to be careful about the cost of insulin. Well, he was part of raising those costs. What about people who have chronic diabetes or any of these things? They need that deductibility. Yeah. Again, we're going to pay one way or the other. Very good letter.
Anyway, Eric writes, hello, panel. It was Bernie Sanders, not Obama, who received the average $27 from campaign contributions. Good point. Thank you for that.
Obama's campaign had done that prior to Sanders, though.
They had.
Yes.
And Howard Dean really started
Dean started it, yeah. Right.
Well, thanks for that, in response to that. Appreciate that a lot. Got me off the hook.
But your point was well taken. These small dollar donors are key.
Benji.
Well, and it was accurate.
Benji, sexual harassment? Can you describe or delineate the difference between sexual propositioning or sexual advancement that leads to rejection and sexual harassment, either in your opinion or legally? I wouldn't even try. So in other words, somebody goes up to you and says, if you're a woman, and says, wanna, is that sexual harassment?
Well, if someone, if you have a meeting with a superior and she's the young young employee and he's the superior, and he says, want to come home with me or go out with me, and you say no, and then you don't get any other assignments, or if you say no and then he keeps hounding you.
And that's where it gets gray and difficult to prove, right?
Very difficult
to
prove.
And we see this historically in any case or trial involving these issues, is that there are these big, long documents of trying to put together evidence, timelines, repetition, things like that. And it's to the point where a lot of, the statistic in the U.S. is that one in four college women can expect to experience some sort of sexual
assault.
And so there are workshops that encourage students to document everything, because there's such a great potential that they could be a victim.
Right. Okay, just
so
for the hell of it.
There's sexual assault, there's sexual harassment, and then there's, asking people out on dates, and they're different, and people know the differences.
Yeah.
You know, okay. It when you see it, experience it.
Oh, Ed says, no more male morning show hosts. You mean there will never be men with integrity available for a place of leadership? Ridiculous. And that's from Addie. Libby and I went around on that. Do you remember this week?
My thing is, though, I'm just looking at it. I'm not looking at it. I'm not saying, yes, there are many men who would fit in that role. My question is, will they be hired? My question is, will there be to avoid that from happening again, and to put those men in power, and instead of changing the culture, my question is, will they put a new man into the role at CBS News to replace Charlie Rose, or will they add another woman?
Well, I mean, there's a greater issue among the networks, especially of just the makeup of their staffs in general. And certain networks have been accused of, being less diverse or more diverse, whether that's by gender, and that ties into equity and pay, ethnicity, other sorts of experiences.
Sure.
But
what about the chicken or the egg, Jen? That's the question. You take a guy and you put him into a position like Matt Lauer's or somebody, and he now has a lot of power. He may have come into that without sexual predatory notions, but now that he has the power, he uses it. No?
Right, and can you create a culture where that's not allowed, where that's just not tolerated?
The answer to your question is yes, you can
create
such a thing.
That's the key. Create a culture where that is not tolerated, and deal with the enablers so that they're enabling the protection of the victim, not the, the opposite.
And who are the enablers now?
The enablers are people, I bet if you started talking about... when the Halperin story came out, Mark Halperin story, people said it was an open secret. Everybody knew. So the enablers are the people, you know that there's a problem, but he's so powerful that people navigate around it as opposed to deal with it. The enabler is the scheduler who sets the appointment for Charlie Rose to send the very young person out to his house, knowing his reputation, rather than saying to Charlie Rose, no, we're not going to do that, Charlie.
And when she goes to him... When the woman goes to her and says he behaved this way, she says, "Well, that's just Charlie being Charlie," and continues to put women in that position.
And those phrases are extremely dangerous and makes it more difficult for anyone to report these issues and see action being taken.
In every one of these stories, there are people who knew. There was in the Charlie Rose story, there was a chilling account of the male producer who texted this new young woman to say, here's the phone number to this car service, because she was out at his house alone. If you need to get out of there, call the car service. So this male producer knew enough to know to warn this young woman, here's
still
a backup plan.
That's still extremely passive aggressive, and I think that you just need to flat out put a stop to it. And I think, in general, folks need to stop making poor decisions. If you're a man going to this role, you know your position. Be a role model and not a louse.
Okay, so then there's Lee who says...
Hi, Lee.
Esteemed panel, I like that. Are all sexual harassment offenders the same?
No.
Is the cancer taking healthy tissue with it? Is Matt Lauer the same as Trump or Roy Moore or Weinstein? We've gotten a lot of male folks basically defending Al Franken and saying... For you people to speak of Al Franken in the same sentence with Weinstein is outrageous because it's not the same thing. Now, all I can tell you is I just suspect those are people who listen to WAMC who may have a liberal orientation and who may not like this.
I do think I'm pretty, rabid on the issue of sexual harassment, but I do think you have to be very careful whether it's a conservative or liberal about false equivalency. And I do think... you have to distinguish between Al Franken's alleged behavior, which he has owned up to, and is different than Roy Moore's behavior, alleged behavior of going after children, or of Harvey Weinstein's behavior of serially,
which continues to come and come and come
in terms
of what we're getting here.
And occasional you know, examples of inappropriate interaction with women as opposed to a culture, creating culture of fear of everyone around you.
And Victoria says, do not underestimate pro-lifers. A major motivator of Trump's base is the support of pro-life issues, appointment of pro-life judges, and Pence, a pro-lifer, is a big part of this. These voters do not care about anything else Trump does as long as there's a chance of ditching Roe v. Wade. Watch the judge appointments, and that's from Victoria in Nova Scotia.
Hmm. Well, but I understand the pro-life folks have a concern about life, but it's got to be, you know, not just from conception to birth. They also have to be concerned about from birth to death. And what about the aspects of pro-life from birth to death? What about the early childhood programs? What about the child health programs? What about all of those?
Quality of life.
You have to look at the whole picture.
I want to go to a different place for just a moment and tell everybody that the much improved app on our WMC app, which is fantastic, and you can listen all over the world, and it is so easy to use it and to listen to this program. So what I would love, this just reminded me, this Nova Scotia listener, is if everybody would do me a favor and tell one person, you should listen to this program. This is really something. And you should hear Jen and Teresa and all on this program. And then let's start to see how many people write in from California and Colombia, South America, you know?
It'd be interesting to know where people are listening from.
Yeah.
Always interesting. We have about 2 minutes left, so I feel that we probably can get in at least, does anybody have anything that... you always have an issue you want to talk about.
I'm so worried about Bears Ears National Park. Trump is really, I know you're looking at me like, are you kidding me?
All right. No.
So Trump is really going after Native Americans.
Right.
If you think about it, think about the pipeline, sure, how he disrespected their sacred land in the pipeline in North and South Dakota. And think about the code talkers, the highly respected code talkers and the denigrating and the Pocahontas issue. And now there's a sacred place for Native Americans called Bears Ears National Park. And Barack Obama expanded, you know, made it a national park, expanded it in respect for Native Americans because this is very sacred land to them. So Donald Trump is not only going to shrink it, he's going to go there to do an event to celebrate the fact that he's shrinking this land and basically taking away the finally long-fought win. Everybody look up Bears Ears National Park and the beautiful, it's just, I've never been there, I want to go, just beautiful place. But there's just a whole layer of denigrating Native Americans in this country by Donald Trump, and it's just shameful.
All right, we will end there. My thanks to our panel. My thanks to all of you for being with us this morning. Teresa, Jen, Alan, thank you. We will be back and continue our program after this short break.